This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. B.J. Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, in particular UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at wvuafm.ua.edu. Or you can download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. Also, if you have any show topics for upcoming shows, please email those to us at brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu. And of course, I'll consider using those show topics. I think I've got all the shows scheduled already for the fall semester, but then after the winter break, we'll start up with new shows, and I am always needing new shows, it seems like, for the spring semester. So if you have those, email those to me. I'll try to remember to give this email out so you can do that. And also, we may take some email questions tonight from listeners. I just don't know. I'll just have to check. Catherine, please remind me to check my email during the show. Tonight's topic is an interesting one. We've had shows specifically on anxiety and social anxiety, I believe, social anxiety disorder, but we've never had a show about shyness. And I have had several students over the 16 years that I've been here who have talked about feeling like they were shy. And I've kind of felt inadequate in helping them or knowing, you know, what to do to treat shyness, because there's a lot of questions surrounded, is it shyness or is it social anxiety? And that's actually what I've titled this show. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Lynn Henderson. She's joining us from California, from Berkeley, actually. And Dr. Henderson is an author, speaker, and the founder of the Shyness Institute. The Shyness Institute is a nonprofit research corporation founded in 1994 and is dedicated to research regarding shyness, social anxiety, and related anxiety disorders. Dr. Henderson's website is wonderful. It is just a plethora of information on shyness, social anxiety. I had no idea that you had this website until I started researching the topic. The website is simply shyness.com. So it's a great resource if you are a shy person or if you are looking for some help for someone who has told you that they are shy. Thanks for being on the show.
For sure.
Tell us a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your mm-hmm. credentials, and why you're interested in the topic of shyness.
I'm a psychologist, and I'm now in private practice in Berkeley. I used to direct the Shyness Clinic in Palo Alto. Phil Zimbardo founded a clinic at Stanford. We moved it into the community, and I ran it for 25 years. And I had met Phil at a conference and heard him talk about shyness. And I thought, and I love to do group therapy. Yeah. So I thought, wow, what an interesting population to work with. And so I met him afterward and said, if you ever need a volunteer or something like that, let me know. And it wasn't too long after that, he called me and he said, do you want to run the Shyness Clinic? We want to move it into the community.
Wow.
So we did. But the thing that interests me about it is that the people who came to the clinic, well, let me back up a minute. There's a difference between shyness and social anxiety disorder. and even social anxiety in some way, because social anxiety is an emotional state. We know when we're scared, we're socially scared.
Yeah.
But when we're shy, it's we can feel social anxiety, but there are people who label themselves as shy who don't even feel a lot of anxiety. Mostly they just, it's a more like introversion. You know, I just don't, I am concerned about evaluation. I'm not terribly anxious, but I don't like the feeling. And so I just assume not have, you know, be exposed to too many social situations. But we ran 6-month groups at the Shyness Clinic. And one of the things I was struck with is how, because we got a lot of Silicon Valley engineers, we got a lot of people like that who were very successful professionally, but had a hard time asking for a date.
Right.
And so in the 6-month groups, we role played for the first 3 months, the situations that people were scared of. And as they role played them, they got more and more proficient. I even installed mirrors along one wall in the Shyness group room so that people could see how much better they looked than they thought they did.
Right, right.
When you're shy and socially anxious, you're feeling all sorts of self-critical thoughts. And then when they look at themselves in the mirror, you'd say, does that look so bad?
Right.
And they could actually see that it didn't. Plus, the other thing that struck me was how quickly they made friends with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We had an exercise we did when they first came to group. We did it the first night, and we said, okay, we broke people up into dyads, and we said, we're going to leave the room, and I want you to have a getting acquainted conversation. And they looked at me like, oh, my God, you're not going to do that. What we did, and you'd be standing outside in the waiting room, outside the group room.
Uh-huh.
They were so noisy, it was funny. I mean, when they were with each other and knew other people felt shy, they talked like you couldn't believe.
Yeah, it was a common denominator.
Exactly.
So they didn't feel, I guess, as self-conscious, because the other person felt just as self-conscious.
Right.
Okay, I've got to ask you this, though. When you said you love doing group therapy, and started these groups with people who are shy, how did you recruit people who are shy? I would think that would be the biggest turnoff, you know, for somebody who is shy.
That is very perceptive of you. As a matter of fact, we used to call it a marketing nightmare.
Yes.
But we, for some reason, I did groups at Stanford too, through the counseling center for a while. And so I had done student groups. So sometimes we'd get Stanford folks, but we always filled the groups. But it was,
I think the word shyness, uh-huh, as opposed to social anxiety, mm-hmm, is more alluring. I think it is a little bit easier for somebody to say I'm shy rather than they're socially anxious. It's like a stronger term, socially anxious.
Right. And it's only 2.5% of the population who say they've never experienced shyness.
Really?
Yeah. It's a universal human emotion, a mixture of fear and interest. And
a mixture of fear and interest.
Yeah.
Really?
So it's like you want to approach, but you're scared. So it's not just complete avoidance. They like people, but they're scared. So it's a mix of feelings. And when they understand that this is a universal emotion and they're not alone, and a lot of people feel shy and never talk about it. They just do what they need to do.
That's right. You have literally answered about 10 of my questions are on my list. It's okay. No, I'm going to ask you specifically. Philip Zimbardo, Zimbardo?
Yes.
In one of the articles, because I try to research articles before, or just do research before I have somebody on the show. And he is one of the persons who I've read a couple of his articles. The one of them was written a while ago, but I think it's still very relevant now, is the cost of shyness.
Yeah. He wrote a book in 1977, I think.
Yeah.
On shyness. And that's still relevant because the phenomenon is still similar. But I think we're a little more sophisticated about how to treat it. And one of the things that I never wanted to do with shyness was pathologize it.
What do you mean by that?
I didn't want to label shyness an illness.
Yes.
I did not want it in the DSM
right.
as a medical problem.
Right.
And that's why I came up with the idea of social fitness. We can't work out once a month and be physically fit, and we can't work out once a month and be socially fit.
I want you to talk more specifically about that in just a minute. But first, go back to not pathologizing it, because in that article that I mentioned, the cost of shyness, I think Dr. Zimbardo, he references, I don't know if it was a title of a book or just a presentation he did, but he called it, was it the disease, a social disease called shyness? And yeah. It kind of shocked me. It kind of threw me back a little bit, because that would sound like it was pathology. Did I say that right? Pathologizing
yes.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's where Phil and I differed. I think in the beginning, he really wanted to draw people's attention to it.
Yes.
And one of his strengths as a speaker is he's sort of galvanizing, because he says things are almost outrageous a lot of the time. I didn't want to do that because I didn't believe it. And I thought to pathologize something that's an ordinary human trait that...
Very common.
Yeah, because you mentioned a study that he did that said, you know, 40% of the population
yes.
was shy.
Yes.
Well, I did two at Stanford, and 60% of Stanford students were shy.
I wouldn't doubt that at all. I think a lot of, and we had our first show for the semester last week was how to get involved on campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think this is a major issue. I think it goes back to students. A lot of students are shy. And I don't know if that's ever been researched on this campus. You know, that would kind of be a fun little research project for somebody to do.
Yeah.
To see what percentage admit or feel like they are shy mm-hmm. and to legitimize it for them.
Yes. And I think they did one study at Stanford. I'm not sure it was specifically directed at shyness, but they did where in the very beginning of when freshmen were coming in, they let them be in small groups with a facilitator. And they talked about how natural it was to be nervous when you're first there, or to be concerned about evaluation and that kind of thing. And they normalized it. And that helped everybody, including the folks who were shy.
Yes, yes. You mentioned the Shyness Institute. Let's take a break, Catherine, right here. And then when we come back, I want you to give specifics about the Institute, you know, what tests you have to take to get in. I'm kidding. Yeah. How much is tuition? Just basically what it is and how many people have responded well and it's worked for, and how many people you've actually had in it. And also, when we come back, I want to pick on engineers a little bit, because I see several engineering students, and this is an issue with many of them. It's fascinating to me how they choose, how certain professions and certain majors go along with shyness, and how people compensate with the certain majors, if that makes sense. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and tonight our show is about shyness. I really entitled it Shyness or Social Anxiety with a question mark. If you have questions or for my guests or myself, or you have any comments about this show, email the comments or questions to brainmattersradio@wvuafm.ua.edu, and I'll try to answer those. My guest is Dr. Lynn Henderson. She's joining us from Berkeley, California tonight, where she has done so much research in the area of shyness. I mean, how many years has this been since you have focused on shyness?
Well, wow.
That long.
Yeah, it's a long time. And I don't do research anymore. I used to do it.
But you've written how many books?
Three. Yeah, one is for therapists called Helping Your Shy and Socially Anxious Client.
Wow. And we need that for our library, Catherine.
And another one I did was called, because I've also studied compassion-focused therapy, and this is Building Social Confidence Using Compassion-Focused Therapy to Overcome Shyness and Social Anxiety. That's for people who feel shy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one, the new one, is actually a workbook based on that book that will come out in January.
So it's not out yet.
It's not out yet.
Talk about the social, the Shyness Institute. How'd you come up with the idea?
Well, it's important to differentiate what I ran in Palo Alto and where we ran the groups. That was the Shyness Clinic.
Okay.
Because that's where we saw group members and that sort of thing. And we ran groups for people who labeled themselves as shy. And we did a lot of testing before they came in to, you know, get the profile and that sort of thing. But I can't resist telling you this. One of the funniest things that is when we'd be doing intakes at the Shyness Clinic, somebody would come in and meet with me individually, because they would meet with me individually two times and they'd take a battery of tests. And they'd say, I just want you to know, I'm really sorry to say this, but I am probably the most shy person you have seen.
If only they knew.
Right. And every one of them said that to me. I mean, it was, and we used to joke about that in the room.
I mean, it's funny how their perceptions of themselves is it's just, they're just the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, I'm curious, how would you, when you were doing therapy with clients who label themselves as shy, how would you measure their progress?
We would give them a subset of the questionnaires they got on when they first came in as a post test, and I used to present those results at conferences. They get significant reductions in depression, and there's another interesting aspect of this, but in depression, in self blame, in shame, because one of the things about shyness is that it isn't the fear that's the major, in my mind, the major problem. It's the shame. Because a person would go into a shy, you know, go into a conversation and that sort of thing. And then they'd analyze it after the conversation was over.
Yes.
And for anything that went wrong, they would take the responsibility and the blame. For anything that went well, they would attribute it to the other person.
Exactly.
And so what they did was they reversed the self-enhancement bias, because men in our culture, particularly, you know, given a competitive industrial society,
right,
they were taught to give themselves credit when anything went well and to externalize credit when anything didn't go well. Well, that's not my fault. It must be one of my coworkers or something else.
Right.
And that was one of the ways in a competitive society they kept their motivation going. And I did some research on this. And then people who were shy would reverse the self-enhancement bias and give themselves credit for anything that went wrong.
It's interesting you say that. I have talked with so many students that they say that, and sometimes I think I have mislabeled it as just anxiety, and it probably is some anxiety,
sure,
you know, but it may be shyness. And if I had known to be able to relabel that or just reword it, may have helped the student better, now that I'm thinking about that, because I hear a lot of students who they can't sleep at night because they're just thinking about all who all they've talked to all day and how they've performed, and they're very self-conscious about that.
Mm-hmm. And the shame is the most painful thing, because the thing with if we're scared about something, our energy's still moving. We still got the energy to get on with it.
Uh-huh.
When we feel really ashamed, we just want to go in our bedroom and suck our thumb.
And shut down.
We don't want to do anything. So that's why the primary thing for me from the beginning in the shyness clinic was to work with shame and to educate clients about that. Shame is the killer emotion.
I would have never put it together, you know, without you saying it or reading about it specifically. Are there on your website that I mentioned, shyness.com, mm-hmm. are there any self help, I guess, questionnaires that people can take?
There is, I think, you know, I haven't looked at the website for a while. So I think there's a shyness questionnaire there.
Okay.
But I think there may be a couple of others as well.
That people can go to and take if they're wondering which it is or if it's both. What's the difference in the Shyness Clinic and the Institute?
Oh, thank you for asking that. The Institute was a nonprofit that would help fund our research.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was always very tiny.
So
the clinic was the place where people came and
actually you had clients. You mentioned briefly the Shyness Fitness Training. That is fascinating to me. When I was researching on the website, I couldn't wait to talk to you about this. This is, to me, it's the key.
I love that you
say that. I do too. It is. Well, it's the key to it.
Well, and the thing of it is, it's social fitness. It's
social.
It's social fitness. And it makes sense to the clients because you say, if we want to be physically fit, we can't work out once a month and be physically fit. There's no way we can do it. And we can't be socially fit if we only work out once a month.
I love that.
That kind of thing makes sense to people. And again, it takes away the pathologizing. This is not an illness. We're out of shape. And for some of us, there may be parts of our bodies that we'd like to work better than they do, but we still work out, we still get in shape. And it also pulls it away a little bit from perfectionism.
Mm.
You know, because often people who feel shy think they're supposed to be perfect social performers, and nobody does that or can do that. If you don't talk to other people about that, I mean, we girls tell each other that stuff when we're 11 and 12. And so it humanizes it.
Yeah.
And then it's common humanity. So you don't worry about it as much.
The social fitness training, is it literally a program? Plan?
Those were the 6-month groups we did.
Okay.
We'd do 3 months of role plays of situations that they were scared of. And then the second 13 weeks was all about intimacy, developing intimacy. Because when people focus on shyness, they talk about getting to know people and that sort of thing. But one of the bigger fears sometimes was, oh, I can get along fine at parties and that sort of thing, but I'm not going to tell you anything personal about myself.
Yes, that's right.
But that's vulnerable.
As a therapist, I've had a difficult time helping someone with social skills, just mm-hmm. social skills. I mean, because it's basic stuff. And when it comes natural to you, like it does maybe you or me, it's very hard to teach somebody that. That's where this social fitness training, I think, would come in for a therapist. You know, you mentioned your book that you wrote for therapists. I can't wait to order that for our library to help our students with just social skills, too, and practicing that.
Right. There is a good book on that too by David Johnson. And I think it's called Reaching Out.
Okay.
And he does a great job of walking through social skills. And we use that book at the clinic.
Okay. That makes sense.
Because you're right. It's really hard to do that when you're just kind of having to come up with it. He's got a lot of structured exercises that we used.
Well, thank you for that. You know, you mentioned the intimacy, and you vaguely mentioned men and us girls, how we talk at 11 years old. What's the gender differences when it comes to shyness? Are there gender differences? Is it a lot? Is it a big difference?
That's really interesting. There are no differences, I don't think, in incidence of shyness. I think equal numbers of men and women will say that they're shy. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there are differences that way. Not,
what about cultural differences?
Well, it's really interesting because I think in terms of national cultures, I don't honestly have that data. But I do think that if you think of it, we create cultures wherever we are, in businesses, in work settings, in clubs, and that sort of thing. The more their dominant sort of cultures are really competitive cultures, then people are more set up for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because they think in terms of hierarchies. Whereas if you're in collaborative cultures, where people get listened to and are encouraged to participate. I did a research study on shy leaders, which I thought was fascinating.
It's got to be.
What we did was we interviewed people who were already known to be leaders in their fields, and they themselves said they were shy. So we did an interview study. We had three raters, including myself, and we rated the interviews. We transcribed and rated the interviews. And one of the things that was most fascinating to me was the shy leaders were good listeners. That's how they were described. And it was fascinating to me that, and it was one of the things that made them such strong leaders, was they listened to their people. And the other odd benefit was, because they felt shy a lot of the time, they wanted their subordinates to go ahead and get the limelight. They didn't care about it. They wanted to get the job done.
Well, because they could take some of the attention off of themselves, because a lot of what I read is sometimes most people who are shy are egocentric because they're always worried about what they're saying and whatnot. So if you focus on the other person and listen to them, it's simple. You just tag along and hang on to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost gives you a pathway out of being shy, I would think. I think it was in this article that I keep mentioning, The Cost of Shyness, the term shy extrovert.
Yes.
What does that mean? And along the lines of what you mentioned with the leaders, mm-hmm. I guess maybe they would fall into that category. Maybe. I don't know.
No, not necessarily at all. They could be, I think some of them were sort of a mix of maybe introversion, extroversion. Some of them were introverted. But I think that the key issue is just if somebody is a good listener, they empower their people. And I used to present this paper at conferences and we talk about that. And I'd say, who would you rather work for? Somebody who's going to make you shine or somebody who really needs to shine themselves? Because I do think that the other thing I noticed about the clients and that sort of thing is they tended to be very considerate of each other. They were good team players. And I always found that fascinating. I mean, when they weren't feeling like they had to be in the spotlight and they could just be themselves and nobody was talking about a spotlight, then they collaborated wonderfully. I actually got permission from one group to film them in a problem-solving exercise. We were doing this exercise at the clinic, and I filmed it, and I thought, my God, they're fantastic problem solvers. And so I showed it at conferences. just the video of the exercise with their permission. But that's the thing that was one of the things that was most fascinating to me was how they could collaborate themselves. And once they made friends in the group and they had their support system, mm-hmm. we would encourage them to get together outside of group. You know, we never did that in the old days.
Right. No.
Right.
You discouraged it.
Right. But we encouraged it in the shyness groups because it gave them a chance to socialize.
Yeah.
And we'd do field trips and that kind of stuff to the Stanford Shopping Center. And, you know, they would buy things and exchange things. And we'd do kind of outlandish things sometimes to see how much attention you
get. And to build their confidence.
Yeah.
To build their confidence.
And to find out that you can do ridiculous things and get away with it. We had one where I laid down on the sidewalk and the group members just stood looking at me like, you are insane. And a woman walked by and she said, she doesn't look dead. Is she okay? No, you know, nobody paid that much attention.
And who cares?
And who cares?
Who cares? Is there a difference? We're going to take a break in just a minute, but I want to ask you first. Is there a difference in being an introvert and being shy?
Yeah, introverts, I think, are not, they like their own company. They might like one or two good friends, and that's enough for them always. And it's not a pathology. It's just they tend to be introverted.
No.
And that's all it is. Somebody who feels shy has that concern about negative evaluation, usually. Mm-hmm. An introvert doesn't necessarily have that.
And what in this article, it also talks about shyness and being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And introverts, if what you're saying is the case, they're not lonely. They enjoy their own company.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And one or two close friends that they know really well.
Wow. Let's take a break again. And when we come back, I want to ask you about COVID, how that has affected working with our incidences of shyness, and also technology, how that affects it. So hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. We're talking tonight about shyness and or social anxiety, but mostly shyness, I would say, because it's fun to talk about. I like talking about this topic because it's been a difficult, just me as a therapist in a counseling center on a college campus, it not many people come in and right off the bat say, I'm shy. Sometimes we get to that eventually, but they don't just come out and say it, or they think it is something wrong with them. There's something wrong with them that they're having difficulty meeting people, peers, you know, people their own age or whatnot.
Right.
My guest tonight is Dr. Lynn Henderson. She is in Berkeley, California right now, and just specializes in shyness. She's written 3 books, but also is the founder of the Shyness Institute and a wonderful website. If you're interested in going and taking a look for resources, is shyness.com, which is so simple to remember. I mean, that's easy to remember. But when we left off before the break, I wanted to ask about COVID. How has that, have you noticed any kind of effect or change in having to meet with people via Zoom, like I am?
Mm-hmm.
And also how technology does that affect shyness in that? Does it make it worse?
Well, I mean, that's complex, I think, the technology part. One of the things we did a research study at Palo Alto High School when I was running the Shyness Clinic. And what we found was that shy students did spend more time communicating via email than the non-shies did.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would use it for social interaction, but often they'd use it as a bridge for getting to know somebody, but that they used it more. So I think technology can be both a help and a hindrance.
I know.
Because if it can be a hindrance because they can spend all their time on technology, which can happen, and computer games and that sort of thing. And sometimes we have to actively work with that in therapy. Let's limit your time on the computer games and substitute more social interaction. But technology can be a little bit of a bridge to closer interaction.
I think you just answered my question. My next question was going to be, how, if somebody is shy and they are utilizing technology for most every interaction, how do you get them to practice social skills?
Well, I think what happens is if you're working with them, they have to limit the time on technology and deliberately start gradually more social interaction. And then it's CBT. It's specific homework yes. on specific days and that sort of thing. In terms of COVID, I ran a shyness group recently, and it was the smallest one I'd done. I ran it with four people. And of course, it was on Zoom, but they did really well. I mean, that's the thing that's fascinating to me is they talked a lot in the group among themselves. And of course, that's how I would know at the clinic when a group was successful is they'd be talking more to each other than me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I just need to step away now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could just kind of back out and let this go on. And the same thing happened when it was virtual. And that's the other thing I found out that therapists may want to know with the COVID stuff is if I had advertised it for a longer period of time, we actually did get more people coming in because therapists were finding out about it gradually and information wasn't traveling as fast.
Yeah.
So I probably got another 6 or 8 applicants after I'd already started the group. So if people are doing groups during COVID, you may want to give it a fairly long lead time.
And how? What's the max number that you will have in your group?
I usually had at Stanford and now 6 to 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a standard group, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you can be more specific about this, but I don't know. What about brain? How does the brain factor into shyness? Are we wired for this? Do people learn how to be shy? Does it run in families? Is it genetic?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, this was studied a while ago by Elaine Aron, who talked about the highly sensitive person. And it wasn't shyness, but it was this sensitivity and perceptiveness, which was a gift. But it could become a cross
yes.
in situations where that were more competitive, that were more challenging that way. So in some ways, and then people would be more vulnerable to being shy. And in terms of the biology of it, one research study I read, said that people with a more inhibited temperament tended to get they didn't, when they met new people and then the faces and that sort of thing got more familiar, people who are not shy will sort of habituate and the amygdala activation goes down.
Yeah.
And the activation in the hippocampus goes down. With the shy folks, what they were finding is that it didn't go down. They didn't habituate the same
wow.
way.
Okay.
Now, and in one part of the study, because the study only ran for a certain length of time, they didn't habituate then. So the question was, do they just take longer to habituate? Now, that would have been Elaine Aron's hypothesis with the highly sensitive people.
Uh-huh.
that's the way I would probably see it. But there was some question, and I think they're going to do more research on this. Is that just an ongoing temperament thing where they're always going to have that more, have less habituation, say, have more activation?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought that independently as a clinician running groups, because it seemed to me that I saw people coming out a lot and being more themselves. But this still may be the case, and that's not my specialty, is that kind of research. So,
yeah. Have you ever had same family members in your group?
No, I don't think I have.
You know, like brothers or sisters, or somebody came and was in the group, and then maybe next year another family member would come, you know?
You know, did I have sequential? I can't honestly remember.
And this is just going back to the question of, does it run in families?
Well, it can, if there's a genetic component, which is hypothesized, that it can run in families. But on the other hand, I think...
is it more learned behavior?
I think, I mean, that's my bias, because my background was clinical psychology and social psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
And social psychology, you know, that's
what it talks about, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, is the influence of the environment. So I tended to see it more that way. And if you could provide the right conditions, the safety, the feeling that whatever they said was going to be okay, that social interaction was negotiated for everybody, and everybody feels tension about it sometimes. To me, that was the way to go. And I thought I saw people really come out. Now, did their basic temperament change? Probably not.
Yeah.
But did they become more outgoing, and did they do a lot of the things they were afraid to do? Yes.
Speaking of fear, because you talked about this at the very beginning, this same article, Dr. Zimbardo, he says, people who are shy, I'm just going to read this verbatim, live trapped between two fears, being invisible and insignificant to others, and being visible but worthless.
Ooh.
Which you've kind of touched on, the being visible but worthless, and the self-esteem issues, shame, yeah. Even.
I don't know. I mean, I think when they're in a shame state, then maybe worthless. But I don't know, unless they're really depressed at the same time. I didn't have the feeling that it was worthless.
It's a strong word.
Yeah, but Phil is very dramatic. He wants your attention, and he's really good at getting it. He and I would say that differently.
Yeah. Well, and he said being invisible and insignificant to others. Do you find that true also? Do you think people who have been in your groups had a fear of not being heard?
Well, yeah, I think sometimes they have that fear. But I also think that a lot of shy people are very effective in groups and on service projects and that sort of thing. So often they're very well respected.
Yes.
They are thought much better of than they're aware of. And that's why the group setting is helpful, is because they could see other people performing really well and liking them and that sort of thing, and say, well, yeah, and that's the way they're looking at me. You know, they think I'm fine and they're not, but I think, and we're all in the same boat.
They just had that disconnect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I get it.
But I do believe, and I think it's one of the reasons I got involved in the self-compassion work, is because, you know, CBT is great. You can change your behavior. You can do different things. But often the self-compassion was lacking. The self-blame and the shame was the most painful thing. So when you add self-compassion to it and self-compassion training, I think that can change.
That can change.
Yeah.
Let's take our final break. And then when we come back, I've got a couple more questions. One about any risk with being shy, And then I want you to give us some resources if you know of any good ones that are even better or complementary to the resources you've already given us with your website, okay? So we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listen to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight with Dr. Lynn Henderson from the Shyness Institute, but she's also written several books, and she's a speaker and has had years of experience working with this population, which is fascinating. You keep using the term fascinating. And that's our topic tonight, is shyness, or is it social anxiety? We've really talked more about shyness because I think there are way more people out there who identify with what we're talking about, Lynn. And one of my last questions, is this is our final segment, is, are there any risks with being shy?
Any risks?
Risk. Mm-hmm. Any, you know, any things that would put a person who is shy, make them more, I guess, vulnerable. And I got this from the same article because it was such an in-depth article. And one of the things they talk about, I guess, is the risk of being teased or bullied or rejected by their peers, or the loneliness, predisposition for loneliness we talked about, being more vulnerable because they might not have, family or friends around them to protect them or support them. That's what I'm talking about. The article even mentioned potential for possibly being a substance abuser, which I don't understand that, how there is a correlation necessarily with that.
I could only think about that in terms of if somebody gets really isolated.
Yeah.
And they use it to self-medicate.
Exactly.
I didn't see that much of that, but of course those people probably wouldn't come to therapy. But and what was the rest of the question? You're saying risks. You know, I do think that they can be at greater risk of bullying if somebody notices, if a bully is around,
yeah,
and notices that they're shy and wants to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. I think the difference, though, is that happens a lot in junior high school. But as you get into high school and as you get into college, you've got people observing.
That's right.
And people observing a bully like the bully less than they like the shy person. And they're often apt to say to the, you know, to the bully, I don't want to hear it. Go away and don't bother us.
And they'll kind of protect and take up for the person who's shy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see that too. And also one thing we haven't even touched on, maybe I need to have you back to talk specifically about dating, which is my favorite topic. Relationships and dating.
Oh, well, I have to tell you a funny story about that. When I was running groups at Stanford at the counseling center, we had this one guy in the group, and it was six or eight people. It was a fairly good-sized group. And he was talking about this girl he'd met in class that he was really liked. He thought she was out of his league and all that stuff. And finally, one of the guys in the group said, why don't you just ask her out and try? He came back the next week and he said, you're not going to believe this. I did ask her out. We went out for coffee. We had a really nice talk. But this happened before that. The guy said, what am I going to do if I'm shy? And the fellow in the group said, well, tell her you're feeling shy.
Yeah.
And so he did. And she said, Oh my God, so am I. I am so glad you told me.
It broke the ice.
Well, yeah, and the thing of it is, too, we're all shy in situations that are important to us.
I mean, the first date? Yeah.
Yeah, everybody is. People will acknowledge it or not. But if you're not shy at all, you're probably psychopathic.
But you're a serial killer, basically. No, I think it's better to go ahead and just be vulnerable and let it out. And then it gives that other person permission to be vulnerable too. It worked.
Yeah.
Are they married now?
I wish I knew. He was still dating her at the end of group, and I don't know beyond that.
Well, the group cured him.
Yeah. Well, the basically. Group, and it was so much more powerful coming from another group member.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I think it would be good to do a group here for on shyness. I wonder how many students we would get who would be interested. I bet we get a lot.
I think you might.
I think I might. This might be my idea for a new group. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Hey, tell us a little bit if you have any more resources that you can share with us besides the ones we've already talked about.
I told you about David Johnson.
Yeah.
That social skills book.
What about any apps? Do you know any apps? Because the kids love, you know, they love utilizing apps.
You know, that I wish myself I knew more about, because what is that WhatsApp where they text each other, and people in the groups will use that sometimes with each other. So, but that's really the only one I know.
I haven't come across any either specifically for, you know, shyness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would need to research that, and I haven't.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show. This hour's gone by really quickly, and I appreciate it. I know it's a couple of hours earlier out there in California, so I appreciate you being on the show. This is so fascinating. I love it. I love talking about this.
I do, too. This was fun.
Yeah, you've given me some ideas, and I think I'm going to get a couple of these books, your book and David Johnson's book, for our library. I don't think we talk about this enough, to be honest, or consider it, as opposed to a DSM-4 diagnosis. I'll say it that way.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that's so true. And I even wonder if I were still doing stuff on campus, I'd be really curious about doing those groups early in the semester.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where they have a chance to, where even if you met three or four times early in the semester and then met three or four times later in the semester.
Yes, because it's a place they belong.
Yeah.
They feel like they belong. Thanks again for being on the show. I've got a few more things to read, but I appreciate it. Lynn, take care.
Yeah, you too. And I appreciate it too. It was a really fun conversation.
Thank you. Great questions. Oh, well, thank you so much. Don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted on Apple Podcasts, also on audioboom.com and voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to voices.ua.edu on the Counseling Center's website, and our website is counseling.ua.edu. I like to make an announcement about QPR. I think it's so important this time of year that the Counseling Center offers QPR training upon request. QPR stands for Question, Persuade, and Refer. Three steps anyone can learn to help prevent suicide. Do your part and in two short hours, learn the warning signs for suicide and three simple skills of how to intervene and save someone's life who is suicidal. To sign up for the free QPR Gatekeeper training for suicide prevention for your department or individually, or if you have any questions about QPR, please contact the Counseling Center at 205-348-3863, because just like CPR, QPR is an emergency response to someone in crisis and can save lives. As always, I want to thank the people who've made this show possible. He's our executive director of the Counseling Center, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media, my production assistant, Catherine Howell, and my colleagues at the Counseling Center, of course, the WVUA staff who helped edit this show every week, and my guest tonight, Lynn Henderson. Don't forget, we're on next week again at 6 p.m. Join us. The topic's going to be interesting. I've never talked about functional medicine. So our guest next week is going to be talking about functional medicine. So join us next week on 90.7 The Capstone. Thanks again for listening, and good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.